Chapter 17. Pepana Leaf. Beneath the pepana tree, the hermit Gautama focused all of his formidable powers of concentration to look deeply at his body. He saw that each cell of his body was like a drop of water in an endlessly flowing river of birth, existence, and death. And he could not find anything in the body that remained unchanged, or that could be said to contain a separate self. Intermingled with the river of his body was the river of feelings, in which every feeling was a drop of water. These drops also jostled with one another in the process of birth, existence, and death. Some feelings were pleasant, some unpleasant, and some neutral, but all of his feelings were impermanent. They appeared and disappeared, just like the cells of his body. With his great concentration, Gautama next explored the river of perceptions, which flowed alongside the rivers of body and feelings. The drops in the river of perceptions intermingled and influenced each other in their process of birth, existence, and death. If one's perceptions were accurate, reality revealed itself with ease. But if one's perceptions were erroneous, reality was veiled. People were caught in endless suffering because of their erroneous perceptions. They believed that which is impermanent is permanent. That which is without self contains self. That which has no birth and death has birth and death. And they divided that which is inseparable into parts. Gautama next shone his awareness on the mental states, which were the sources of suffering. Fear, anger, hatred, arrogance, jealousy, greed, and ignorance. Mindful awareness blazed in him like a bright sun, and he used that sun of awareness to illuminate the nature of all these negative mental states. He saw that they all arose out of ignorance. They were the opposite of mindfulness. They were darkness, the absence of light. He saw that the key to liberation would be to break through ignorance and to enter deeply into the heart of reality and attain a direct experience of it. Such knowledge would not be the knowledge of the intellect, but of direct experience. In the past, Siddhartha had looked for ways to vanquish fear, anger, and greed, but the methods he had used had not borne fruit because they were only attempts to suppress such feelings and emotions. Siddhartha now understood that their cause was ignorance, and that when one was liberated from ignorance, mental obstructions would vanish on their own, like shadows fleeing before the rising sun. Siddhartha's insight was the fruit of his deep concentration. He smiled and looked up at a papaya leaf imprinted against the blue sky, its tail blowing back and forth as if calling him. Looking deeply at the leaf, he saw clearly the presence of the sun and stars. Without the sun, without light and warmth, the leaf could not exist. This was like this because that was like that. He also saw in the leaf the presence of clouds. Without clouds, there could be no rain. And without rain, the leaf could not be. He saw the earth, time, space, and mind. All were present in the leaf. In fact, at that very moment, the entire universe existed in that leaf. The reality of the leaf was a wondrous miracle. Though we ordinarily think that a leaf is born in the springtime, Gautama could see that it had been there for a long, long time in the sunlight, the clouds, the tree, and in himself. Seeing that the leaf had never been born, he could see that he, too, had never been born. Both the leaf and he himself had simply manifested. They had never been born and were incapable of ever dying. With this insight, ideas of birth and death, appearance and disappearance dissolved, and the true face of the leaf and his own true face revealed themselves. He could see that the presence of any one phenomenon made possible the existence of all other phenomena. One included all, and all were contained in one. The leaf and his body were one. Neither possessed a separate permanent self. Neither could exist independently from the rest of the universe. Seeing the interdependent nature of all phenomena, Siddhartha saw the empty nature of all phenomena, that all things are empty of a separate, isolated self. He realized that the key to liberation lay in these two principles of interdependence and non-self. Clouds drifted across the sky, forming a white background to the translucent papaya leaf. Perhaps that evening, the clouds would encounter a cold front and transform into rain. Clouds were one manifestation. Rain was another. Clouds also were not born and would not die. If the clouds understood that, Gautama thought, surely they would sing joyfully as they fell down as rain onto the mountains, forests, and rice fields. Illuminating the rivers of his body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness, Siddhartha now understood that impermanence and emptiness of self are the very conditions necessary for life. Without impermanence and emptiness of self, nothing could grow or develop. If a grain of rice did not have the nature of impermanence and emptiness of self, it could not grow into a rice plant. If clouds were not empty of self and impermanent, they could not transform into rain. Without an impermanent, non-self nature, a child could never grow into an adult. Thus, he thought, to accept life means to accept impermanence and emptiness of self. The source of suffering is a false belief in permanence and the existence of separate selves. Seeing this, one understands that there is neither birth nor death, production nor destruction, one nor many, inner nor outer, large nor small, impure nor pure. All such concepts are false distinctions created by the intellect. If one penetrates into the empty nature of all things, one will transcend all mental barriers and be liberated from the cycle of suffering. From one night to the next, Gautama meditated beneath the papaya tree, shining the light of his awareness on his body, mind, and all the universe. His five companions had long abandoned him, and his co-practitioners were now the forest, the river, the birds, and the thousands of insects living on the earth and in the trees. The great papaya tree was his brother in practice. The evening star, which appeared as he sat down in meditation each night, was also his brother in practice. He meditated far into the night. The village children came to visit him only in the early afternoons. One day, Sujata brought him an offering of rice porridge cooked with milk and honey, and Svasti brought him a fresh armful of kusa grass. After Svasti left to lead the buffaloes home, Gautama was seized with a deep feeling that he would attain the Great Awakening that very night. Only the previous night he had had several unusual dreams. In one, he saw himself lying on his side, his head pillowed by the Himalaya mountains, his left hand touching the shores of the eastern sea, his right hand touching the shores of the western sea, and his two feet resting against the shores of the southern sea. In another dream, a great lotus as large as a carriage wheel grew from his navel and floated up to touch the highest clouds. In a third dream, birds of all colors, too many to be counted, flew toward him from all directions. These dreams seemed to announce that his great awakening was at hand. Early that evening, Gautama did walking meditation along the banks of the river. He waded into the water and bathed. When twilight descended, he returned to sit beneath his familiar papaya tree. He smiled as he looked at the newly spread kusa grass at the foot of the tree. Beneath this very tree, he had already made so many important discoveries in his meditation. Now the moment he had long awaited was approaching. The door to enlightenment was about to open. Slowly, Siddhartha sat down in the lotus position. He looked at the river flowing quietly in the distance as soft breezes rustled the grasses along its banks. The night forest was tranquil, yet very much alive. Around him chirped 1,000 different insects. He turned his awareness to his breath and lightly closed his eyes. The evening star appeared in the sky. Chapter 18. The Morning Star Has Risen. Through mindfulness, Siddhartha's mind, body, and breath were perfectly at one. His practice of mindfulness had enabled him to build great powers of concentration, which he could now use to shine awareness on his mind and body. After deeply entering meditation, he began to discern the presence of countless other beings in his own body right in the present moment. Organic and inorganic beings, minerals, mosses, and grasses, which he could now use to shine awareness on his mind and body. After deeply entering meditation, he began to discern the presence of countless other beings in his own body right in the present moment. Organic and inorganic beings, minerals, mosses and grasses, insects, animals, and people were all within him. He saw that other beings were him right in the present moment. He saw his own past lives, all his births and deaths. He saw the creation and destruction of thousands of worlds and thousands of stars. He felt all the joys and sorrows of every living being, those born of mothers, those born of eggs, and those born of fission, who divided themselves into new creatures. He saw that every cell of his body contained all of heaven and earth, and spanned the three times, past, present, and future. It was the hour of the first watch of the night. Gautama entered even more deeply into meditation. He saw how countless worlds arose and fell, were created and destroyed. He saw how countless beings passed through countless births and deaths. He saw that these births and deaths were but outward appearances and not true reality, just as millions of waves rise and fall incessantly on the surface of the sea, while the sea itself is beyond birth and death. If the waves understood that they themselves were water, they would transcend birth and death and arrive at true inner peace, overcoming all fear. This realization enabled Gautama to transcend the net of birth and death, and he smiled. His smile was like a flower blossoming in the deep night, which radiated a halo of light. It was the smile of a wondrous understanding, the insight into the destruction of all defilements. He attained this level of understanding by the second watch. At just that moment, thunder crashed, and great bolts of lightning flashed across the sky as if to rip the heavens in two. Black clouds concealed the moon and stars. Rain poured down. Gautama was soaking wet. But he did not budge. He continued his meditation. Without wavering, he shined his awareness on his mind. He saw that living beings suffer because they do not understand that they share one common ground with all beings. Ignorance gives rise to a multitude of sorrows, confusions, and troubles. Greed, anger, arrogance, doubt, jealousy, and fear all have their roots in ignorance. When we learn to calm our minds in order to look deeply at the true nature of things, we can arrive at full understanding, which dissolves every sorrow and anxiety and gives rise to acceptance and love. Gautama now saw that understanding and love are one. Without understanding, there can be no love. Each person's disposition is a result of physical, emotional, and social conditions. When we understand this, we cannot hate even a person who behaves cruelly. But we can strive to help transform his physical, emotional, and social conditions. Understanding gives rise to compassion and love, which in turn give rise to correct action. In order to love, it is first necessary to understand. So understanding is the key to liberation. In order to attain clear understanding, it is necessary to live mindfully, making direct contact with life in the present moment, truly seeing what is taking place within and outside of oneself. Practicing mindfulness strengthens the ability to look deeply. And when we look deeply into the heart of anything, it will reveal itself. This is the secret treasure of mindfulness. It leads to the realization of liberation and enlightenment. Life is illuminated by right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Siddhartha called this the Noble Path, Arya Marga. Looking deeply into the heart of all beings, Siddhartha attained insight into everyone's minds, no matter where they were, and he was able to hear everyone's cries of both suffering and joy. He attained to the states of divine sight, divine hearing, and the ability to travel across all distances without moving. It was now the end of the third watch, and there was no more thunder. The clouds rolled back to reveal the bright moon and stars. Gautama felt as though a prison that had confined him for thousands of lifetimes had broken open. Ignorance had been the jailkeeper. Because of ignorance, his mind had been obscured, just like the moon and stars hidden by the storm clouds. Clouded by endless waves of deluded thoughts, the mind had falsely divided reality into subject and object, self and others, existence and non-existence, birth and death. And from these discriminations arose wrong views, the prisons of feelings, craving, grasping, and becoming. The suffering of birth, old age, sickness, and death only made the prison walls thicker. The only thing to do was to seize the jailkeeper and see his true face. The jailkeeper was ignorance, and the means to overcome ignorance was the Noble Eightfold Path. Once the jailkeeper was gone, the jail would disappear and never be rebuilt again. The hermit Gautama smiled and whispered to himself, "O jailer, I see you now. How many lifetimes have you confined me in the prisons of birth and death? But now I see your face clearly, and from now on you can build no more prisons around me." Looking up, Siddhartha saw the morning star appear on the horizon, twinkling like a huge diamond. He had seen this star so many times before while sitting beneath the pipala tree, but this morning it was like seeing it for the first time. It was as dazzling as the jubilant smile of enlightenment. Siddhartha gazed at the star and exclaimed out of deep compassion, "All beings contain within themselves the seeds of enlightenment, yet we drown in the ocean of birth and death for so many thousands of lifetimes." Siddhartha knew he had found the great way. He had attained his goal, and now his heart experienced perfect peace and ease. He thought about his years of searching, filled with disappointments and hardships. He thought of his father, mother, aunt, Yasodhara, Rahula, and all his friends. He thought of the palace, Kapilavatu, his people and country, and all of those who lived in hardship and poverty, especially children. He promised to find a way to share his discovery to help all others liberate themselves from suffering. Out of his deep insight emerged a profound love for all beings. Along the grassy riverbank, colorful flowers blossomed in the early morning sunlight. Sun danced on leaves and sparkled on the water. His pain was gone. All the wonders of life revealed themselves. Everything appeared strangely new. How wondrous were the blue skies and drifting white clouds. He felt as though he and all the universe had been newly created. Just then, Svasti appeared. When Siddhartha saw the young buffalo boy come running toward him, he smiled. Suddenly, Svasti stopped in his tracks and stared at Siddhartha, his mouth wide open. Siddhartha called, "Svasti!" The boy came to his senses and answered, "Teacher!" Svasti joined his palms and bowed. He took a few steps forward, but then stopped and gazed again at Siddhartha in awe. Embarrassed by his own behavior, he spoke haltingly, "Teacher, you look so different today." Siddhartha motioned for the boy to approach. He took him into his arms and asked, "How do I look different today?" Gazing up at Siddhartha, Svasti answered, "It's hard to say. It's just you look so different. It's like you were a star." Siddhartha patted the boy on the head and said, "Is that so? What else do I look like?" "You look like a lotus that's just blossomed, and like the moon over the Gayasisa peak." Siddhartha looked into Svasti's eyes and said, "Why, you're a poet, Svasti. Now tell me, why are you here so early today, and where are your buffaloes?" Svasti explained that he had the day off, as all the buffaloes were being used to plow the fields. Only the calf had been left in its stall. Today his only responsibility was to cut grass. During the night, he and his sisters and brother were awakened by the roar of thunder. Rain pounded through their leaky roof, soaking their beds. They had never experienced a storm so fierce, and they worried about Siddhartha in the forest. They huddled together until the storm subsided and they could fall back asleep. When day broke, Svasti ran to the buffalo's stall to fetch his sickle and carrying pole and made his way to the forest to see if Siddhartha was all right. Siddhartha grasped Svasti's hand. "This is the happiest day I have ever known. If you can, bring all the children to come see me by the papala tree this afternoon. Don't forget to bring your brother and sisters. But first, go and cut the kusa grass you need for the buffaloes." Svasti trotted off happily as Siddhartha began to take slow steps along the sun-bathed shore. Chapter 19. Tangerine of Mindfulness. When Sujata brought Siddhartha's food that noon, she found him sitting beneath the pipala tree, as beautiful as a young morning. His face and body radiated peace, joy, and equanimity. She had seen him sitting solemnly and majestically beneath the pipala tree over 100 times, yet today there was something different about him. Looking at Siddhartha, Sujata felt all her sorrows and worries vanish. Happiness as fresh as a spring breeze filled her heart. She felt there was nothing else she needed or wanted on this earth, that everything in the universe was already good and beneficial, and that no one needed to worry or despair anymore. Sujata took a few steps forward and placed the food before Siddhartha. She bowed before him. She felt the peace and joy within Siddhartha enter herself. Siddhartha smiled at her and said, "Here, sit down with me. I thank you for bringing me food and water these past months. Today is the happiest day of my life, because last night I found the great way. Please enjoy this happiness too. In the near future, I will go teach this path to all others." Sujata looked up with surprise. "You will be going? You mean you will leave us?" Siddhartha smiled kindly. "Yes, I must leave, but I won't abandon you, children. Before I leave, I will show you the path I've discovered." Sujata was not very reassured. She wanted to ask him more, but he spoke first. "I will remain with you children for at least several more days in order to share what I have learned with you. Only then will I take to the road. But that doesn't mean I will be apart from you forever. From time to time, I will return to visit you children." Sujata felt comforted. She sat down and opened the banana leaf to reveal the offering of rice. She sat silently at Siddhartha's side as he ate. She watched as he broke off pieces of rice and dipped them in sesame salt. Her heart was filled with inexpressible happiness. When he finished eating, Siddhartha asked Sujata to return home. He said he wanted to meet with the village children that afternoon in the forest. Many children came, including Svasti's brother and sisters. The boys had all bathed and put on clean clothes. The girls wore their loveliest saris. Sujata's sari was ivory-colored. Nandabala wore a sari the color of banana shoots, and Bhimi's sari was pink. The children, looking as fresh and colorful as flowers, sat around Siddhartha beneath the pipala tree. Sujata brought a basket full of coconut and chunks of palm sugar as a special treat. The children scooped out the tasty coconut meat and ate it with the delicious sugar. Andabala and Subhash brought a basket full of tangerines. Siddhartha sat with the children, his happiness complete. Rupak offered him a chunk of coconut with a piece of palm sugar on a pipala leaf. Andabala offered him a tangerine. Siddhartha accepted their offerings and ate with the children. They were still enjoying their lunch when Sujata made an announcement. "Dear friends, today is the happiest day our teacher has ever known. He has discovered the great way. I feel this is also a very important day for me. Brothers and sisters, let us consider this a day of great jubilation for us all. We are here today to celebrate the enlightenment of our teacher. Respected teacher, the great path has been found. We know you cannot stay with us forever. Please teach us the things you think we might be able to understand." Sujata joined her palms together and bowed to Gautama to express her respect and devotion. Nandabala and the other children also joined their palms and bowed with deepest sincerity. Siddhartha quietly gestured for the children to sit back up, and he said, You are all intelligent children, and I am sure you will be able to understand and practice the things I will share with you. The great path I have discovered is deep and subtle, but anyone willing to apply his or her heart and mind can understand and follow it. When you children peel a tangerine, you can eat it with awareness or without awareness. What does it mean to eat a tangerine in awareness? When you're eating the tangerine, you are aware that you're eating the tangerine. You fully experience its lovely fragrance and sweet taste. When you peel the tangerine, you know that you are peeling the tangerine. When you remove a slice and put it in your mouth, you know that you are removing a slice and putting it in your mouth. When you experience the lovely fragrance and sweet taste of the tangerine, you are aware that you are experiencing the lovely fragrance and sweet taste of the tangerine. The tangerine Nandamala offered me had 9 sections. I ate each morsel in awareness and saw how precious and wonderful it was. I did not forget the tangerine, and thus the tangerine became something very real to me. If the tangerine is real, the person eating it is real. That is what it means to eat a tangerine in awareness. Children, what does it mean to eat a tangerine without awareness? When you're eating the tangerine, you do not know that you're eating the tangerine. You do not experience the lovely fragrance and sweet taste of the tangerine. When you peel the tangerine, you do not know that you're peeling the tangerine. When you remove a slice and put it in your mouth, you do not know that you're removing a slice and putting it in your mouth. When you smell the fragrance or taste the tangerine, you do not know that you are smelling the fragrance and tasting the tangerine. Eating a tangerine in such a way, you cannot appreciate its precious and wonderful nature. If you are not aware that you are eating the tangerine is not real. If the tangerine is not real, the person eating it is not real either. Children, that is eating a tangerine without awareness. Children, eating the tangerine in mindfulness means that while eating the tangerine, you are truly in touch with it. Your mind is not chasing after thoughts of yesterday or tomorrow, but is dwelling fully in the present moment. The tangerine is truly present. Living in mindful awareness means to live in the present moment, your mind and body dwelling in the very here and now. A person who practices mindfulness can see things in the tangerine that others are unable to see. An aware person can see the tangerine tree, the tangerine blossom in the spring, the sunlight and rain that nourish the tangerine. Looking deeply, one can see 10,000 things that have made the tangerine possible. Looking at a tangerine, a person who practices awareness can see all the wonders of the universe and how all things interact with one another. Children, our daily life is just like a tangerine. Just as a tangerine is comprised of sections, each day is comprised of 24 hours. 1 hour is like 1 section of tangerine. Living all 24 hours of a day is like eating all the sections of a tangerine. The path I have found is the path of living each hour of the day in awareness, mind and body always dwelling in the present moment. The opposite is to live in forgetfulness. If we live in forgetfulness, we do not know that we are alive. We do not fully experience life because our mind and body are not dwelling in the here and now. Gautama looked at Sujata and said her name. Yes, teacher? Sujata joined her palms. Do you think a person who lives in awareness will make many errors or few? Respected teacher, a person who lives in awareness will make few errors. My mother always tells me that a girl should pay attention to how she walks, stands, speaks, laughs, and works in order to avoid thoughts, words, and actions that might cause sorrow to herself or others. Just so, Sujata. A person who lives in awareness knows what she is thinking, saying, and doing. Such a person can avoid thoughts, words, and actions that cause suffering for herself and others. Children, living in awareness means to live in the present moment. One is aware of what is taking place within oneself and in one's surroundings. One is in direct contact with life. If one continues to live in such a way, one will be able to deeply understand oneself and one's surroundings. Understanding leads to tolerance and love. When all beings understand one another, They will accept and love one another. Then there will not be much suffering in the world. What do you think, Svasti? Can people love if they are unable to understand? Respected teacher, without understanding, love is most difficult. It reminds me of something that happened to my sister Bhima. One night she cried all night long until my sister Bala lost her patience and spanked Bhima. That only made Bhima cry more. I picked Bhima up and sensed that she was feverish. I was sure her head ached from the fever. I called Bala and told her to place her hand on Bhima's forehead. When she did that, she understood at once why Bhima was crying. Her eyes softened, and she took Bhima into her arms and sang to her with love. Bhima stopped crying even though she still had a fever. Respected teacher, I think that was because Bala understood why Bhima was upset. And so I think that without understanding, love is not possible. Just so, Svasti. Love is possible only when there is understanding. And only with love can there be acceptance. Practice living in awareness, children, and you will deepen your understanding. You will be able to understand yourselves, other people, and all things, and you will have hearts of love. That is the wonderful path I have discovered. Svasti joined his poems. Respected teacher, could we call this the path of awareness? Siddhartha smiled. Surely, we can call it the path of awareness. I like that very much. The path of awareness leads to perfect awakening. Sujata joined her palms to ask permission to speak. You are the awakened one, the one who shows how to live in awareness. Can we call you the awakened one? Siddhartha nodded. That would please me very much. Sujata's eyes shone. She continued. Awaken in Mugati is pronounced Bud. A person who is awakened would be called Buddha in Mugati. We can call you Buddha. Siddhartha nodded. All the children were delighted. 14-year-old Malaka, the oldest boy in the group, spoke. Respected Buddha, we are very happy to receive your teaching on the path of awareness. Sujata has told me how you have meditated beneath this pipala tree for the past 6 months and how just last night you attained the great awakening. Respected Buddha, this pipala tree is the most beautiful one in all the forest. Can we call it the tree of awakening? The Bodhi tree? The word Bodhi shares the same root as the word Buddha and also means awakening. Gautama nodded his head. He was delighted too. He had not guessed that during this gathering with the children, the path, himself, and even the great tree would all receive special names. Nandaba joined his palms. It is growing dark, and we must return to our homes, but we will come back to receive more of your teaching soon. The children all stood and joined their palms like lotus buds to thank the Buddha. They strolled home, chattering like a flock of happy birds. The Buddha was happy too. He decided to stay in the forest for a longer period of time in order to explore ways to best sow the seeds of awakening and to allow himself as well special time to enjoy the great peace and joy that attaining the path had brought him. Chapter 20. The Deer. Every day the Buddha bathed in the Narinjara River. He did walking meditation along the riverbanks and along the small forest paths his own steps had created. He sat in meditation on the shore beside the flowing river or beneath the Bodhi tree while hundreds of birds chirped among its branches. He had realized his vow. He knew he must return to Kapilavatthu, where so many awaited news of his quest. He recalled as well King Bimbisara in the city of Rajagaha. He felt a special affinity for the young king and wished to visit him also. There were also his 5 former companions. He knew they each possessed the ability to attain liberation quickly, and he wanted to find them. No doubt they still dwelled nearby. River, sky, moon and stars, mountains, forest, every blade of grass and every mote of dust were transformed for the Buddha. He knew that the long years he wandered in search of the way had not been wasted. Indeed, thanks to his trials and hardships, he had finally discovered the way in his own heart. Every living being possessed the heart of enlightenment. The seeds of enlightenment existed in everyone. Living beings did not need to seek enlightenment outside of themselves, because all the wisdom and strength of the universe was already present in them. This was the Buddha's great discovery, and was cause for all to rejoice. The children came to visit him often. The Buddha was happy to see that the way of liberation could be expressed simply and naturally. Even poor country children who had never attended school could understand his teaching. This greatly encouraged him. One day the children arrived with a basket full of tangerines. They wanted to eat the tangerines in awareness in order to practice the very first lesson the Buddha had taught them. Sujata bowed gracefully before the Buddha and then held the basket before him. He joined his palms together like a lotus bud and took a tangerine. Sujata offered the basket to Svasti, who was sitting by the Buddha's side. He, too, joined his palms together and took a tangerine. She offered the basket to each child until everyone had a tangerine. She sat down and placed her palms together before taking a tangerine for herself. All the children sat silently. The Buddha told them to follow their breath and smile. Then he lifted his tangerine in his left hand and looked deeply at it. The children followed his example. He slowly peeled his tangerine, and the children began to peel theirs. Teacher and students enjoyed their tangerines in silent awareness. When everyone was finished eating, Bala gathered up the peels. The children had greatly enjoyed eating their tangerines mindfully with the Buddha. The Buddha took great pleasure in sharing such a practice with the children. The children visited the Buddha in the afternoons. He showed them how to sit still and to follow their breath in order to calm their minds when they felt sad or angry. He taught them walking meditation to refresh their minds and bodies. He taught them to look deeply at others and at their own actions in order to be able to see, to understand, and to love. The children understood all he taught them. Nandabala and Sujata spent an entire day sewing a new robe to offer the Buddha. It was the color of bricks, similar to the cloth of the Buddha's old robe. When Sujata learned he had to take the cemetery cloth used to cover the corpse of her former household servant Radha, who had died of typhoid fever, she wanted to weep. The Buddha was sitting beneath the Bodhi tree when the two girls arrived to offer him the robe. They waited quietly for him to emerge from his meditation. When they presented him with the new robe, he was very happy. "I have need of this robe," he said. He told them he would keep the old cloth as well, in order to have something to wear whenever he washed his new robe. Nandabala and Sujata privately resolved to sew him another robe soon. One day, Sujata's 12-year-old girlfriend, Balagupta, asked the Buddha to speak to them about friendship. Just the day before, Balagupta had had an argument with her closest friend, Jatilika. She had not wanted to stop by Jatilika's house on her way to see the Buddha the following day, and only did so at Sujata's insistence. Jatilika only agreed to join them because Sujata was there. When the girls arrived at the Bodhi tree, Balagupta and Jatilika sat far apart from one another. The Buddha told the children about the friendship shared by a deer, a bird, and a turtle. He told them that the story had taken place several thousand years before, when he was a deer in a past life. The children looked surprised, but he explained, "In previous lives, we have all been earth, stones, dew, wind, water, and fire. We have been mosses, grasses, trees, insects, fish, turtles, birds, and mammals. I have seen this most clearly in my meditations. Thus, in one life, I was a deer. This is quite an ordinary thing. I can still remember a life in which I was a jagged rock upon a mountain peak, and another life in which I was a plumeria tree. It is the same for all of you. The story I am going to tell you is about a deer, a bird, a turtle, and a hunter. Perhaps one of you was the bird, and another the turtle. We have all existed in times when there were not yet any humans, or even birds and mammals on earth. There were only plants beneath the seas, and trees and vegetation on the earth's surface. In those times, we may have been stones, dew, or plants. Afterward, we experienced lives as birds, as all kinds of animals, and finally as human beings. Right now, we are more than just human beings. We are rice plants, tangerines, rivers, and air, because without these things we could not be. When you children look at rice plants, coconuts, tangerines, and water, remember that in this life you depend upon many other beings for your existence. These other beings are part of you. If you can see that, you will experience true understanding and love. Although the story I'm about to tell you took place several thousand years ago, it could just as easily take place this very moment. Listen carefully and see whether or not you have something in common with the animals in this story. Then the Buddha began to tell his tale. At that time, the Buddha was a deer who lived in a forest that had a clear lake where the deer liked to drink. A turtle lived in the lake's waters, and a magpie lived in the branches of a willow tree beside the lake. Deer, turtle, and magpie were very close friends. One day, a hunter followed day-old tracks left by deer that led to the edge of the lake. There he left a trap made of strong ropes before returning to his hut on the outskirts of the forest. Later that day, when deer came to the lake for a drink of water, he was caught by the trap. He cried out and was heard by turtle and magpie. Turtle crawled out of the water, and magpie flew down from her nest. They discussed how best to help their friend get out of his predicament. Magpie said, "Sister Turtle, your jaws are sturdy and strong. You can use them to chew and cut through these ropes. As for me, I'll find a way to prevent the hunter from coming back here." Magpie then flew off in haste. Turtle began to gnaw at the ropes. Magpie flew to the hunter's hut and perched on a mango branch outside his front door all night to wait for him. When day broke, the hunter took a sharp knife and walked out his door. As soon as she saw him, Magpie flew into his face with all her might. Struck in the face by the bird, the hunter was momentarily dazed and went back inside his hut. He lay down on the bed to rest a moment. When he got up, he paused for a moment, and then, still clutching his sharp knife, went out the back door of his hut. But clever Magpie had outguessed him. She was waiting at the back, perched on a jackfruit branch. Again, she flew into his face, smacking him hard. Struck in the face twice by a bird, the hunter went back into his house to think things over. He decided it was an unlucky day, and that perhaps it would be best to remain home until the morrow. The next morning, he rose early. He picked up his sharp knife, and as a precaution, covered his face with a hat before he walked out the door. Seeing she could no longer attack the hunter's face, Magpie sped back to the forest to warn her friends. "The hunter is on his way!" Turtle had almost chewed through the last of the ropes, but the last rope seemed as hard as steel. Her jaws were raw and bloody from chewing non-stop throughout two nights and a day. Still, she did not stop. Just then, the hunter appeared. Frightened, Deer gave a mighty kick, which broke through the last rope and set him free. Deer ran into the forest. Magpie flew high into the willow tree. But Turtle was so exhausted from her efforts that she could not move. The hunter was angry to see the deer escape. He picked up the turtle and tossed her in his leather sack, which he left hanging on a branch of the willow tree. Then he went off to find Deer. Deer stood concealed behind some bushes and so saw Turtle's predicament. "My friends risked their lives for me," he thought. "Now it is time for me to do the same for them." Deer stepped out in full view of the hunter. He pretended to stumble as though very tired, and then he turned away and hobbled weakly down the path. The hunter thought, "The deer is almost out of strength. I will stalk it and soon kill it with my knife." The hunter pursued Deer deeper and deeper into the forest. Deer managed to stay just out of the hunter's reach. When they were far from the lake, Deer suddenly broke into a run until he was out of the hunter's sight. He covered his hoof prints and then returned to the lake. He used his antlers to lift the leather bag off the branch and to shake Turtle out. Magpie joined her two friends. "You both saved me from sure death today at the hunter's hand," said Deer. "I fear he will return here before long. Magpie, fly to a safer spot in the forest. Sister Turtle, crawl back into the water and hide. I will run back into the forest." When the hunter arrived back at the lake, he found his leather sack on the ground empty. Frustrated, he picked it up and, still clutching his knife, trudged home. The children had listened to the Buddha's tale with wide-eyed interest. When the Buddha described how raw and bloody Turtle's jaws had become from chewing the ropes to save her friend, Rupak and Subhash almost cried. The Buddha asked the children, "What do you think, children? Long ago, I was deer. Were any of you Turtle?" Four children raised their hand, including Sujata. The Buddha then asked, "And who among you is Magpie?" Swasti raised his hand, as did Jatilika and Balagupta. Sujata looked at Jatilika and then at Balagupta. "If you were both Magpie, that makes you one person. What good is it for Magpie to be mad at Magpie? Can't our friendship equal that of Magpie, Turtle, and Deer?" Balagupta stood up and walked over to Jatilika. She took her friend's hand in her own two hands. Jatilika pulled Balagupta into her arms and then slid over to make a place for Balagupta to sit. The Buddha smiled. "You children understand the story well. Remember that tales like the one I have just recounted are taking place all the time, right in our own daily lives." Chapter 21. The Lotus Pond. After the children returned home, the Buddha did walking meditation. He lifted his robe to wade across the river and then followed a path between two rice fields that led to a lotus pond he liked very much. There he sat down and contemplated the beautiful lotuses. As he looked at the lotus stems, leaves, and flowers, he thought of all the different stages of a lotus's growth. The roots remained buried in the mud. Some stems had not risen above the surface of the water, while others had barely emerged to reveal leaves still curled tightly shut. There were unopened lotus flower buds, those with petals just beginning to peek out, and lotus flowers in full bloom. There were seed pods from which all the petals had fallen. There were white lotus flowers, blue ones, and pink ones. The Buddha reflected that people were not very different from lotus flowers. Each person had his or her own natural disposition. Devadatta was not like Ananda. Yasodhara was not the same as Queen Pamita. Sujata was not like Bala. Personality, virtue, intelligence, and talent varied widely among people. The path of liberation that the Buddha had discovered needed to be expounded in many ways to suit many kinds of people. Teaching the village children was so pleasant, he thought, because he could speak to them in such a simple way. Different teaching methods were like gates by which different kinds of people could enter and understand the teaching. The creation of Dharma gates would result from direct encounters with people. There were no ready-made methods miraculously received under the Bodhi tree. The Buddha saw that it would be necessary to return to society in order to set the wheel of Dharma in motion and to sow the seeds of liberation. 49 days had passed since his awakening. It was now time to depart from Uruvela. He decided to leave the following morning, parting from the cool forest by the banks of the Naranjara River, the Bodhi tree, and the children. He wanted first to seek out his two teachers, Alarakalama and Udaka Ramaputta. He was confident that they would attain awakening in no time at all. After assisting these two venerable men, he would find the five friends who had practiced austerities with him. Then he would return to Magadha to see King Bimbisara. The next morning, the Buddha put on his new robe and walked into Uruvela. He went to Svasti's hut and told the young buffalo boy and his family that the time had come for him to depart. The Buddha patted each of the children gently on the head, and together they walked to Sujata's house. Sujata cried when she learned the news. The Buddha said, "I must leave in order to fulfill my responsibilities. But I promise that I will return to visit you whenever I have a chance. You children have helped me greatly, and I am grateful. Please remember and practice the things I've shared with you. That way I will never be far from you. Sujata, dry your tears now and give me a smile." Sujata wiped her tears with the edge of her sari and tried to smile. Then the children walked with the Buddha to the edge of the village. The Buddha was turning to say farewell when he noticed a young ascetic walking toward them. The ascetic joined his palms in greeting and looked curiously at the Buddha. After a long moment, he said, "Monk, you look most radiant and peaceful. What is your name and who is your master?" The Buddha answered, "My name is Siddhartha Gautama. I have studied with many teachers, but no one is my teacher now. What is your name and where are you coming from?" The ascetic answered, "My name is Upaka. I have just left the center of Master Udaka Ramaputta. Is Master Udaka in good health?" "Master Udaka died just a few days ago." The Buddha sighed. He would not have a chance to help his old teacher after all. He asked, "Have you ever studied with Master Alarika Lama?" Upaka answered, "Yes, but he too has recently died." "Do you by any chance know of a monk named Kondana?" Upaka said, "Yes, indeed. I heard about Kondana and four other monks when I was living in Master Udaka's center. I heard they are living and practicing together at the deer park at Isipatana, near the city of Varanasi. Gautama, if you will excuse me, I will continue on my way. I have a long day's journey ahead." The Buddha joined his palms to bid Upaka farewell, and then he turned to the children. "Children, I will follow the road to Varanasi to find my five friends. The sun has risen. Please return home now." The Buddha joined his palms in farewell. Then he followed the river northwards. He knew it would be a longer route, but easier to travel. The Naranjara River led northward to where it emptied into the Ganga. If he followed the westward course of the Ganga, he would reach the village of Pataligrama within a few days. There he could cross to the other side of the Ganga and reach Varanasi, the capital of Kasi. The children gazed at him until he was out of sight. They were filled with terrible sadness and longing. Sujata cried, and Svasti felt like crying too, but he did not want to cry in front of his brother and sisters. After a long moment, he said, "Sister Sujata, I need to get ready to tend the buffaloes. We should all head home. Bala, remember to give Rupak a bath today. Here, I'll carry Bhima." They followed the riverbank toward the village. No one spoke another word. The elder Ananda was gentle and friendly, as well as unusually handsome, and he did indeed possess an uncanny memory. He remembered every detail of every discourse the Buddha gave. He repeated the 11 points the Buddha had elaborated in the Sutra on tending water buffaloes to Svasti and Rahula's gratitude. Svasti realized that Ananda would remember everything Svasti had just recounted about the Buddha's time in the forest near Uruvela. While Svasti recounted his story, he glanced often at Bhikkhuni Gotami. Her sparkling eyes told him how much she enjoyed listening to all he was saying. He made a special effort to include as many details as he could remember. Bhikkhuni Gotami especially enjoyed hearing about all the children in Uruvela, like the time they ate tangerines mindfully with the Buddha in the forest. It was easy to see how much Rahula enjoyed hearing what Svasti had to say. Although the elder Asaji had not made any comments during the 2 days Svasti told his story, it was clear he was enjoying it also. Svasti knew that Asaji was one of the five friends who had practiced self-mortification with the Buddha. Svasti was most curious to know what happened when the Buddha met them after 6 months of separation, but he was too shy to ask. As if she could read his thoughts, Bhikkhuni Gotami said, "Svasti, would you like to hear the elder Asaji tell us what happened after the Buddha left Uruvela? Asaji has been with the Buddha for 10 years now, but I don't think he has ever spoken about what happened in the deer park at Isipatana. Master Asaji, would you consent to tell us about the Buddha's first Dharma talk and some of what has taken place in the past 10 years? Asaji joined his palms and responded, "No need to call me Master, Bhikkhuni Gotami. Today we have already heard a great deal from Bhikkhu Svasti, and it is almost time for meditation. Why don't you all come to my hut tomorrow, and I will tell you all that I remember." Chapter 22. Turning the Wheel of Dharma. Asaji was practicing the austere way in the deer park. One day after a sitting meditation, he noticed a monk approaching from off in the distance. As the stranger came closer, he realized it was none other than Siddhartha, and he quickly told his four friends. Badia said, "Siddhartha abandoned the path halfway. He ate rice, drank milk, and visited the village children. He really let us down. I say we shouldn't even greet him." So the five friends agreed not to meet Siddhartha by the gate to the park. They also decided not to stand and greet him if he should enter the deer park by himself. But what actually took place was entirely different. When Siddhartha entered the gate, the five ascetic companions were so impressed by his radiant bearing that they all stood up at once. Siddhartha seemed to be surrounded by an aura of light. Each step he took revealed a rare spiritual strength. His penetrating gaze undermined their intention to snub him. Kondana ran up to him and took his begging bowl. Mahanama fetched water so that Siddhartha could wash his hands and feet. Badia pulled up a stool for him to sit on. Vapa found a fan of palm leaves and began to fan him. Asaji stood to one side, not knowing what to do. After Siddhartha washed his hands and feet, Asaji realized he could fill a bowl with cool water and offer it to him. The five friends sat in a circle around Siddhartha, who looked kindly at them and said, "My brothers, I have found the way, and I will show it to you." Asaji half believed and half doubted Siddhartha's words. Perhaps the others felt the same, for no one spoke for a long moment. Then Kondana blurted out, "Gautama, you abandoned the path halfway. You ate rice, drank milk, and spent time with the village children. How can you have found the path to liberation?" Siddhartha looked into Kondana's eyes and asked, "Friend Kondana, you have known me a long time. During all that time, have I ever lied to you?" Kondana admitted that he had not. "Indeed, Siddhartha, I have never heard you speak anything but the truth." The Buddha said, "Then please listen, my friends. I have found the great way, and I will show it to you. You will be the first to hear my teaching. This Dharma is not the result of thinking. It is the fruit of direct experience. Listen serenely with all your awareness." The Buddha's voice was filled with such spiritual authority that his five friends joined their palms and looked up at him. Kondana spoke for them all. "Please, friend Gautama, show us compassion and teach us the way." The Buddha began serenely. "My brothers, there are two extremes that a person on the path should avoid. One is to plunge oneself into sensual pleasures, and the other is to practice austerities which deprive the body of its needs. Both of these extremes lead to failure. The path I have discovered is the middle way, which avoids both extremes and has the capacity to lead one to understanding, liberation, and peace. It is the noble eightfold path of right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. I have followed this noble eightfold path and have realized understanding, liberation, and peace. Brothers, why do I call this path the right path? I call it the right path because it does not avoid or deny suffering, but allows for a direct confrontation with suffering as the means to overcome it. The Noble Eightfold Path is the path of living in awareness. Mindfulness is the foundation. By practicing mindfulness, you can develop concentration, which enables you to attain understanding. Thanks to right concentration, you realize right awareness, thoughts, speech, action, livelihood, and effort. The understanding that develops can liberate you from every shackle of suffering and give birth to true peace and joy. Brothers, there are four truths: the existence of suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. I call these the four noble truths. The first is the existence of suffering. Birth, old age, sickness, and death are suffering. Sadness, anger, jealousy, worry, anxiety, fear, and despair are suffering. Separation from loved ones is suffering. Association with those you hate is suffering. Desire, attachment, and clinging to the five aggregates are suffering. Brothers, the second truth is the cause of suffering. Because of ignorance, people cannot see the truth about life, and they become caught in the flames of desire, anger, jealousy, grief, worry, fear, and despair. Brothers, the third truth is the cessation of suffering. Understanding the truth of life brings about the cessation of every grief and sorrow and gives rise to peace and joy. Brothers, the fourth truth is the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. It is the Noble Eightfold Path, which I have just explained. The Noble Eightfold Path is nourished by living mindfully. Mindfulness leads to concentration and understanding, which liberates you from every pain and sorrow and leads to peace and joy. I will guide you along this path of realization. While Siddhartha was explaining the Four Noble Truths, Kondana suddenly felt a great light shining within his own heart. He could taste the liberation he had sought for so long. His face beamed with joy. The Buddha pointed at him and cried, "Kondana, you've got it! You've got it!" Kondana joined his palms and bowed before the Buddha. With deepest respect, he spoke, "Venerable Gautama, please accept me as your disciple. I know that under your guidance, I will attain the Great Awakening." The other four monks also bowed at the Buddha's feet, joined their palms, and asked to be received as disciples. The Buddha motioned his friends to rise. After they took their places again, he said, "Brothers, the children of Uruvela village gave me the name the Buddha. You too may call me by that name if you like." Kondana asked, "Doesn't Buddha mean one who is awakened?" "That is correct. And they call the path I have discovered the Way of Awakening. What do you think of this name?" "One who is awakened. The Way of Awakening. Wonderful, wonderful. These names are true yet simple. We will happily call you the Buddha and the path you have discovered the Way of Awakening. As you just said, living each day mindfully is the very basis of spiritual practice." The five monks were of one mind to accept Gautama as their teacher and to call him the Buddha. The Buddha smiled at them. "Please, brothers, practice with an open and intelligent spirit, and in 3 months you will have attained the fruit of liberation." The Buddha stayed in Isipatana to guide his five friends. Following his teaching, they gave up their practice of austerities. Every day, three monks went begging for food and returned to share the offerings with the other three. The Buddha gave them individual attention, enabling each monk to make rapid progress. The Buddha taught them about the impermanent and non-self nature of all things. He taught them to look at the five aggregates as five constantly flowing rivers, which contained nothing that could be called separate or permanent. The five aggregates were the body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. By meditating on the five aggregates within themselves, they came to see the intimate and wondrous connection between themselves and all in the universe. Thanks to their diligence, they all realized the way. The first to attain awakening was Kondana, followed 2 months later by Vapa and Badiya. Shortly afterward, Mahanama and Asaji also attained arhatship. In great joy, the Buddha told them, "Now we have a real community, which we will call our Sangha. The Sangha is the community of those who live in harmony and awareness. We must take the seeds of awakening and sow them in all places."